Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today we have finished reading The Color of Magic by Terry Pratchett. Finally, I've read this book.
Yeah.
I can claim it.
It's a classic.
It is a classic. But first, we have to get warmed up. And I was looking through my list of just some inside baseball here. How I do this is whenever I have a dumb thought in my head, I write it in my little notes app.
Yeah.
And then when I look back on them, a lot of them, I'm like, that's not its own warm up. But today I am going to do some rapid fire of ones that I thought did not deserve their own warm up. So get hyped for my even smaller dumb thoughts than normal.
Bite size, you could say.
Okay. Bite size. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You ready for number one?
Yeah. Hit me with it, Luke.
Dan, when you go to like a public restroom and you wash your hands, presumably.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you dry your hands.
Yeah.
You let's say it's like the paper towel dispenser. Ooh. And it's like the one that dispenses like one paper towel. How many do you take?
Two.
Two? No.
Always.
Why two?
Always two.
Why? I don't understand this. Why are people taking more than one? Does it not dry your hand?
One doesn't do me.
One doesn't do you. Outrageous. I will say, I was going to rant about people that take three because I'm like, how? You're
okay, three is greedy. Three is greedy.
This isn't, I'm not even saying this from a conservation standpoint, but it's too much. It's too much.
You know,
even
what,
two, I'm calling shenanigans on you for taking two, actually.
And Luke, I'll tell you this, okay? I will try one because I have one in my common bathroom routine that there is one of these. I always take two because it's just like one for each hand, you know, it's balanced.
Okay.
But you know what? I'll try with one. I'll see if my hands get dry. Actually, now that you mention this, if you're in a bathroom and the only option is one of those blowers,
I hate those.
Do you use it?
Sometimes.
Most
depends
on
how gross the bathroom is.
I don't even use it. I'll just like wash my hands and then like kind of, you know, you kind of flip them, flick them a little bit,
flex
to get the water off, and then I just kind of like like pretend like I'm a surgeon and try and get out without using my hands to touch the door.
Sure.
Because they dry fairly quickly after that, usually. Like I'm not. And it's just, the blowers suck. The blowers are not the solution.
The blowers do.
The blowers, they're loud. They don't get your hands dry very quickly. I think the biggest thing is they're so loud. Like, I don't.
They're very loud.
I hate it.
Makes me uncomfortable. Yeah. Okay. That's number one.
Anyway, but I'm two. I'm a two hand.
You're two.
Two hand.
Which is too many, to be clear.
Fair enough.
My next mini one. Every time a new phone comes out, like, 90% of the ads are about how good the camera is.
Yeah.
Enough. All right. I don't care.
Uh-huh.
How much better than the last one could it possibly be?
Well, but Luke, if the screen is a lot higher resolution, you're going to see how bad the old one was.
I mean, okay, I will acknowledge that maybe like the one from today is much better than the one from like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm not like, unless you're like actually filming movies like they've been advertising.
Yeah.
It's like, who's this for?
I love this, Luke, because there is a certain point where you have to imagine like, where are you going to be looking at these photos? For the most part, most people are going to look at them on their phone, right?
Yeah.
There's only so much resolution that your eye can pick up on that small of a screen. It's not like you're taking these photos to then blow up and put on your wall like poster size. You're not doing that.
Right.
It doesn't need to be that good. You literally can't tell.
But also, the ones from a few years ago are already that good.
Correct.
Like,
yeah.
It's camera technology has, I'm not saying stop making cameras better. I'm just saying, like, it's like the phone version of big truck commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where the big truck commercials show them like,
this one's got a Hemi.
You know, it's like on a mountain in Alaska. And it's like, all right, this is stupid.
It's like, I'm never going to do this.
Enough with the absurd marketing on how good the cameras are.
Yeah. But maybe that's all you needed to finally become that artist that you needed to be, Luke.
Could be.
So could be. Now you're an artist.
Use AI now.
That's true. Why not? AI, make me a family photo that we're all having fun in. Make it look like we're having a lot of fun.
Exactly.
And then there you go.
Okay. Rapid fire number three.
I'm with you on that, Luke.
Okay, good. I don't know how many are... Okay, so this is... I went to physical therapy for a little while.
Ooh,
somewhat recently.
Yeah.
Pretty minor thing. The amount of people showing up to physical therapy in like jeans.
What?
You guys, you...
Lou.
You got to wear the appropriate clothes.
Lou.
You got to wear shorts.
For real? Is this real?
Yes. Yes.
No.
There's a lot of people showing up in like their normal clothes.
Well, Luke, I will say that makes sense.
I mean,
a lot of the people showing up in physical therapy are there because they don't know how to do exercise stuff, right?
Yeah, but like people do not, like most people at a physical therapy office, it's not their first appointment.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, do you think like, they tell them? Do you think they're like, hey, don't wear jeans next time?
I don't know. I hope so.
I don't know if they do. Maybe they're doing upper body stuff, Luke. Do you ever think about that?
No, I'm specifically talking about the people that are going and doing, like, you know, body weight lunges in jeans.
Oh, no.
And it's like, you know, you have to know.
Are they doing this in the same room as you, or are they, maybe they're giving them one of those hospital gowns to do their exercises in, where their butts hanging out? They're like, all right, change into your gown to do your exercises. Maybe that's the...
They'd learn from that, probably.
Yeah. And then they'd be like, the very last day, the PT person would be like, hey, you know you could have brought shorts this whole time. You wouldn't have to go in the gown, right? And they're like, ah, dang it.
The gown's a perk, Dan.
Depending on who you are, I guess. Yeah.
We love the gown.
Oh, man.
Jeans. Okay.
Jeans is crazy, though. Well, hold on, though, Luke, because I do need to get in the mind of this person. Because it's not my first rodeo, right? I've been to some of these appointments before.
Yeah.
These can't be people that do exercise very frequently, right? Because if you do exercise frequently, you have to know the attire, right? Like you learn quickly just by looking around at what everyone else is wearing. Oh.
Yeah, but I think that like just being a person in our society, you would know that. I don't think you have to be a person that exercises.
Luke, I will say I've seen someone in my gym wearing jeans on a elliptical. So.
Yeah, but this defeats your point, though, to be clear. Because you're describing someone who has seen a lot of people doing exercise and has not learned from it.
Listen, Luke, it actually makes my point because this person was doing the elliptical backwards because it had been their first time in the gym. And so Dan went up to him and gave him a few pointers. Okay. So actually, checkmate.
Touche.
One of the pointers I gave him, try shorts next time.
Also go forward typically.
Well, but yeah, they just didn't know. I like showed him how to do it's funny because I was like, actually we need to pause here because I need to tell this story. So there is this young man doing the elliptical, doing it wrong, and it looked so uncomfortable, and so I went up because I don't want
to have a little rhythm. To be fair, the ellipticals, you gotta figure out the rhythm. It's right? Easy to figure it out, I will say.
But Luke, if you've never seen someone doing an elliptical backwards, it looks like a dog that's got socks on its feet and that's trying to kick them off. You're not human body, not designed for backwards elliptical, unfortunately.
That's true.
So, but you can't go up and just be like, hey, you're doing this wrong. Right. So you have to have an approach. And so, you know, the approach was like, hey, is that like, is this your first time? Like, have you done this before? Do you know what you're doing? Of course, they say no, because I'm like, yeah, like, obviously not. But maybe this is just how you want to do it. I don't know. And then you follow up with like, hey, normally I've seen people do it forward, Do you want to try doing it that way? Like, have you tried it that way? No. How do I do that? And I'm like, okay, well, let's one foot in front of the other, literally, how that works.
Sure.
And then we got there.
The elliptical's tough. I don't want to critique. The elliptical's tough. For listeners that don't exercise that
Look,
much.
You
I haven't done the elliptical
shot
very
of
much.
Doing it wrong.
Yeah. And I will say, usually we do things in the forward direction. So
for the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? We had it was a wholesome experience, and I have never seen that young man in the gym since. So I don't know if it worked, but
well, you wouldn't recognize him. He was in shorts.
That's true. That's true. Anyway, jeans at PT insane, but feels like they should have learned. Why did they not learn?
This is what I'm saying. The amount of people doing it.
Do you think that they're coming?
And
from
I
work?
Realize that like maybe you're just coming from after work.
Yeah,
let's throw some shorts in the car. It's easy.
Yeah. Okay. Or they need a gym buddy to give them that little shorts pointer.
Hey, fella, you know how you're wearing things that encase your entire legs and movement is hard in them?
This comes back to my original point. This is somebody who's at the gym in jeans and is like doing deadlifts wrong. That's why they're in PT, because they didn't have a gym buddy to walk up to and be like, hey, actually keep your back straight when you deadlift, and also get some shorts next time, champ.
Get some shorts.
Okay. That's how they ended up in PT.
Could be. Okay. Are you ready for my next one?
Oh, yeah. Give me number four.
I'm going. I know we're going longer than normal, but I set aside a few, so
that's good.
I'm hitting them.
We need to.
I was traveling recently, another quick travel thing.
Got to.
Southwest Airlines, where you, I know they're going to assign seating, but they didn't used to.
Yep.
And so have you done it before?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you get your boarding position, right? It's kind of random.
Yep.
And
you just get on the plane.
You pick a seat. And you line up and you get on the plane. But you line up, crucially, you line up in the order that you were assigned by a random order.
Got to.
And I have to say, they also do this thing where after group A goes,
yeah,
keep in mind, everything's random.
Yep.
Then like the people with kids get to go.
Yes.
And then it's like group B.
Yep.
And so like I'm in group B, right?
Yeah.
And the feeling of resentment that I had when like parents were going in front of me and I was like, excuse me, I have group B. I should be next. And I felt it inside of me. And I was like, this is unhinged for me to be feeling this because I have no claim to be going ahead of people. It's a random draw.
Sure. That's fair.
And I don't have much more than that. This is a thing where it's like the ease by which you can make people feel resentment is too easy.
I feel like there's like a famous psychology experiment where they like had two monkeys and they had the monkeys do a task, and one monkey they gave a carrot and the other monkey they gave a grape. And by the like third time the monkey did the task, the carrot monkey was like screaming to get a grape because he was so upset. Something
it was
like
it was like I felt I had this claim to this thing which I didn't actually have a claim to.
It was completely made up.
That was completely made up, and I was getting upset, and I was like in my brain, like, Luke, you buffoon.
Like they got you.
But it happened. I can't do anything about it.
My thing about this, which is related to your point, I prefer the fact that they don't have assigned seating. I think this is a superior way of doing it.
Okay, sure.
Because I think it's ridiculous to pay like $12 to not sit between two people. Like I just, anyway, assigned seating is insane and it's super inefficient. Regardless, it was the thing that differentiated Southwest.
Yeah.
They've been running a ton of ads being like, finally we're doing assigned seating. Everybody's hype. And I'm like,
I know.
No, we're not. What are you doing? You can't propagandize a feeling in me that you finally you have assigned seating like literally every other airline. No, that's not. I don't feel happy about that. All these happy people in your ads are not me, Southwest.
Right.
Stop it.
They're trying to get you. They're trying to get you like they got me with my resentment. Mm. It's not happening.
Nope.
Dan's made of sterner stuff. Southwest.
You can't lie to me.
Okay, my next one I'm going to actually hold on to.
Oh, wow. Okay. Save it because, for a future warm-up.
Because I actually see some promise in it. Okay. So get hyped for that.
I'm ready, Luke. I'm ready.
Okay, that's my rapid fire. Not so rapid, actually. But let's talk book.
Yep.
We've finished the book.
Yep.
Color of Magic, again.
We need to start. What do you got? So we're going to start on the chapter Lure of the Worm.
Yeah.
Okay, Luke, am I missing something with this chapter? Because this was insane, no?
I mean, yeah. I feel like this chapter
went beyond. Like, let me just, Luke, I'm just going to summarize what happened in this chapter. And you tell me where like, you were with all of this. Because I was reading this and I was like, Terry, what the fuck is going on? Okay, Luke, so in Lure of the Worm, there's a mountain, but it's upside down and hollow on the inside. And inside, there's 88 dragons. And these dragons all have riders, but they're not actually real dragons. They're created by a magical field that's really special and potent in this location. And these dragons are actually imaginary. And the people in the mountain just dream them into being. And if they don't think hard enough, then the dragons don't exist. And inside this mountain, there's a lady. And this lady wants to be the queen. And in order for her to be the queen, she has to have her brothers dead and a king. And so Hrun and our protagonist come through and she's like, Hrun's going to be my king. And so she gives him three trials. And the first trial is, I don't even remember what was the first trial. The first trial was like, I can't even remember. But I think it was
she came in and like swung something at him while he was asleep. And he.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. She almost stabbed him. He stopped her and she was like, oh, you passed test number one. Also, we should say she's so hot and naked. And
yeah.
She also has a dad who's dead, but not dead. And then she gives him a next trial, which is to kill her two brothers. And so he does that. Well, he exiles them, actually. He doesn't kill them, but she decides that's good enough. And then she gives him a third. She's about to give him a third trial. But then Rincewind and Two Flower manifest their own dragon. And then in the middle of that, they actually teleport into like modern times and are up in a plane for a little bit. And then they're done being in the plane after they stop a hijacking and are back in a dragon. And then they grab Hrun on their dragon, and then Hrun gets then captured again by the lady who he actually wants to be with, and they make out, mm-hmm. and Hrun and Rincewind leave. Is that about, did I about cover? Oh, well, yeah. Did I about cover it?
You also, the one, I have a note on this that we can talk about more in a minute.
Yeah.
About how the dead wizard who's not actually that dead is like able to see all of time. Basically.
Oh yeah, that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that. Two Flower is like the greatest at imagining dragons.
Right. He's
also,
like,
so by the way,
basically radioactive. At this
he's
point.
Like the lead singer of that band.
Yeah, he like loves it. You think this is where that band? Oh, it all makes sense now. Actually,
yeah, it's a very chaotic
all that stuff
chapter.
I said, it makes sense because the band probably took inspiration from it.
Probably, yes. Lastly, I also want to add that this has no bearing on the actual, like, well, there's not really a story in the book,
right?
But you kind of forget that whole side quest happens immediately after it ends.
It feels like a way just to lose Hrun. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. What's so where did it lose you, Dan?
It lost me completely when they went into an airplane and stopped a hijacking. I was like kind of with it until that point, and then they teleported into an airplane and stopped a hijacking, and I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
What does any of this mean? Hold on, what am I reading right now?
It did feel like an exercise in just like absurdity for the sake of absurdity.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was and I get that that's sort of like a theme in a lot of this book, is like taking things to absurd places.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm being fucked with. I feel like Terry was fucking with me this whole chapter.
Right. Yeah.
What? Ah, man. Upside down hollow mountain full of imaginary. Like, can you? I can't even think of another way to make it more absurd and like crazy, insane.
I have a logistical qualm.
Okay.
Because there's 88 dragons, yeah. Right? Which is a bad number, to be clear.
Yeah, all the eights here seems to be a problem.
So, but as we see a little bit later, when the person who's imagining the dragons,
yeah,
is not doing it or is like unconscious, the yeah. dragons go away.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what's her name? Like, has to reimagine the dragons when she wakes up in the morning, and then they disappear when she goes to sleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like trying to figure out like where the limitation is, because it feels like the limitation should either be on the amount of dragons that she can imagine or on the like quality of dragon.
I see.
It feels like it shouldn't be both. You know what I mean? I don't know how to articulate that particularly well, but it's weird that she can imagine exactly 88
yeah.
partially manifested dragons. Like, I feel like it should be one really well manifested dragon, or like, well, I don't know.
Well,
maybe
she's stuck with
88. Maybe I'm out of my mind on
this. She's stuck with 88 because you run out of colors at that point. Like, the human mind can only imagine 88 different colors. And so, because, you know, they're like fermions, in that you can't imagine the exact same dragon in the exact same position. So you have to imagine all the dragons as different colors. And so she just runs out of colors when she hits 88.
Is this canon, or are you making that up?
Terry made up all that other bullshit. Why can't I make this up?
No, I'm not criticizing you. I'm like, I'm
it might as
curious
well be
if
canon.
That's actually in the book.
It might as well be in the book.
It sounded good.
Dan's hostile about this chapter, if you haven't picked up
good.
On that. Yeah, I'm just, she can't imagine more than 88 colors. So that's the limitation there.
Okay.
She gets the 88th color that. And is like, there's no more colors. That's it, guys.
Sorry, folks.
Who wants the taupe dragon? Raise your hand.
She needs to figure out the hexadecimal system.
Well, but they don't have the correct number of loops for that many dragons.
I see.
See?
That's right.
So, wouldn't work.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. In getting back to what I said earlier about the dead wizard continuously... Well, okay, so the dead wizard has this thing where he's, like, outside of time,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he has this conversation with our heroes.
Yeah.
Where he keeps being like, did I say this already? Or like, should I say it? I remember saying this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he's like, no, I think maybe I already said it.
Yeah.
And he says that like after almost everything he says. And I'm just like, dude, shut up, man. I get it.
I get why somebody killed you, because you are annoying as hell.
Stop humble bragging about being able to see all of time.
Also, have some confidence in yourself, okay? It's annoying that we have to keep reassuring you that you're doing fine. Just say your piece, okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Weird chapter.
One of the stranger chapters I think I've ever read in any book.
Yeah.
We've read a lot.
I agree. We have. We've had some weird chapters in our day.
Yeah.
So I forget. I have a note that's thematically consistent. I'm not sure if it was in this chapter or not.
Yeah.
So do you remember hearing about the dehydrated ocean?
Yeah, this is in the next chapter.
Okay. It makes kind of no sense.
Yeah.
And I was starting to write this note where I was like, this makes no sense. But then I was realizing how hard it is to make that kind of note, because the book is so chaotic that it's like, am I really going to create the, am I going to critique the nonsense, or does that make me look stupid?
Right. Like, if you start there, it's like the whole book then is that right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Luke. Which is why a part of me feels like we're being fucked with a little bit. That Terry's kind of fucking with us.
That's when I was like, if I make fun of this, feel like I'm falling into the trap.
Right. Terry has laid a beautiful trap here for us that, particularly for you and I in this podcast, is dangerous.
It's tough to do. Listen, folks, coming up with notes for this episode has been tough.
It's been tricky.
Because of exactly what I'm describing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm glad that we both struggled in the same way. And I think this book is making us grow in important and unique ways.
Yes.
But before we move on to the second chapter, the last chapter in the book about the edge.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If there was a magical zone where you could manifest a dope dragon, how long are you staying? Because I am not leaving as quickly as these people did. I don't care if I'm being attacked by a hot witch or whatever. Like, I am able to manifest a dragon that lets me ride it. I'm staying for at least a fortnight.
Yeah, at least a fortnight for sure.
I've got to fly around on this guy and get into some, I don't know, bond with it and do some cool fights and stuff.
Yeah, I agree. You're definitely staying longer than they do.
They stay like a day, max.
I mean, okay. So there's a few levels to this,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So you're definitely staying longer because now you have access to a dope dragon.
Of course.
The one thing I'll say is this dragon on a personality level is kind of lame.
But here's the thing, Luke. You also have the opportunity to imagine cooler dragons over time.
God, I'm getting thrown off by the imagine dragons.
Luke, every time you said it, I was like, radioactive.
But do you think that I'm actually a little bit, can we talk about the logistics of this?
Okay.
So they imagine a dragon and then I feel like part of the explanation was that like a dragon from a different plane actually comes into the space that you've created.
Yes.
So you are kind of pulling an entity, an existing entity.
Right. Right. And this is the sort
shape,
of
though, right?
Yeah. And this is the sort of like plane joke that Terry was doing where then they get manifested into a different plane and it's like literally an airplane. And that's sort of I feel like that was sort of the joke that Terry was getting at there.
Yeah, I think so.
But anyway, yes, I feel like it's kind of a real dragon that gets brought into the zone.
Yeah. So, where I'm not sure how the ability to, like, can you actually imagine and bring into being?
Of course.
I have to separate these two words by a lot of words now.
You imagine a heavy metal dragon. You're like, give me a dragon that's a part of Dragon Black Sabbath.
I feel like maybe this is where I'll land. It's kind of like putting an ad out where you're like, this is the kind of dragon I'm looking
exactly,
for.
Exactly, Luke.
Okay.
And I think this is where because I said a fortnight earlier, I think if you're just stuck with the same dragon, I would really only be there for like a week tops, because I feel like if given a week, we could do all the fun dragon stuff and then it'd be like, okay, well, that's been fun, but like, that's basically all the dragon stuff that we could ever really do.
Right, because it's a fairly small land area, I think, that you have to stay within.
Yeah, yeah. But I think my timeline expands when I can imagine a different dragon every day. When I can be like, you know what? Today I want Harley riding biker dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, sure. Tomorrow I want like cranky grandpa dragon.
Okay.
Like I'm testing the
limits. I feel
like
at this point you're kind of, it's less about, but the thing is that once, you get to that level, kind of the dragon aspect of it, I feel like, falls away. And then it's like, what kind of friend do I want to hang out with today?
Well, but this is a friend who can breathe fire and fly. So
sure. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. No offense, Luke. Kind of cooler.
Okay. Fine. Cooler than me, I guess. But here's the next level of it, Dan.
Yeah.
How long are you staying to experiment to see if imagining other things works?
Whoa. Whew. This is, I hadn't even thought about this, Luke. See, this is why you would be there for a lot longer than I would. I'd be like, right. Hey, Luke, I'm heading out. I just imagined all the dragons. I'll see you later. And you'd be like, I just manifested a hermit crab. This idiot doesn't
know. No, because
know.
The thing is, it'd require a lot of experimentation. Here's where I think it would get interesting.
Yeah.
Because it to succeed, you have to genuinely believe in them.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But also, for it to be like relevant for this scenario, they kind of have to not exist on the world. And so you're limited.
But Luke, and I think this is where this becomes really challenging. If somebody tells me, if I believe in a dragon, I can manifest one.
Yeah.
Then I believe in dragons because it literally affects the real world. Like, I can do it if I believe in them. So yes, I do believe in them because I can create one. Or if I've seen somebody do it because they could believe, like, that changes my belief in them. So if I do that and I'm like, okay, if I believe in a dragon, I can make a dragon. It's like, okay, next up, unicorn. Let's take it to Unicorn City.
Nice. Okay. Okay. You can also do more, man. Okay, I'm staying much longer than we initially thought, because if it's one dragon, I'm leaving pretty quick. But if I've got, like, you know, if we're running 11s of dragons against each other in, like, dragon soccer.
Oh my gosh. Luke, I hadn't even thought. Okay, do you remember when, as a young person, you would get two bugs and put them in a jar to see if they would fight each other, and they would inevitably, like, just run around the jar? You would do, like, real life Pokemon?
Of course.
This,
ethically, to be clear.
I feel like this is ethical because they're, like, sort of fake creatures, right?
Would you? Well, okay.
Can we make these fight? Can we make them fight?
I mean, I was going to go to less combative forms of.
Yeah, but soccer,
contests,
I would,
like,
much
sports.
Rather see two dragons just battle in the night sky with, like, lightning crackling behind them, or like see how many centaurs it takes to take down a dragon, or like.
Oh, you're going to do those kind of experiments? You're going to also imagine like 100 humans versus a gorilla or something?
Yeah. Or like a duck or a horse or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
I would want to see. Yeah. I'd want to know.
We're staying there for a very long time, to be, is kind of where we're getting at, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Especially if our buddy Hrun is the lord of this place now. He's letting us stay.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Hrun's going to get bored. He wants to watch our duels.
Yeah.
Our whatever we're going to call them.
He probably would want to fight. He'd probably want to fight in on. He'd be like, let me in on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
See how many dragons it takes to take down me. More than two.
A grand time would be had by all, Dan, I think.
You gotta hang out.
You gotta hang out a little
especially
bit.
Luke, if you're a tourist here. Come on. And the fact that he said that he's dreamt of a dragon for his whole life, they leave the next day.
Yeah.
This, you add a stop on your vacay at least. You add one stop. Come on. You don't even have a destination in mind. Take another day. Live
Take
it up.
Day.
You're on vacation. Love it. Hang out with that dragon.
I know. It's pretty outrageous.
Yeah. Anyway, Luke, should we go to our next chapter?
Yeah, let's do it. This chapter was a little bit less nonsense-y.
Yep.
Actually, I do have a couple more logistical questions about this chapter as well.
Uh-huh.
So what we find out is that there's this empire.
Yep. Krull.
Krull, who has like become wealthy by setting up a net along the edge of the world, basically.
Yep.
And salvages everything that would otherwise fall off. Now, how does the edge of the world work?
Great question, Luke. This? Because we do need to talk about it.
Are we tapering? Like, is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, because the water is deep, right?
Yes, Luke. This is exactly my point. Something's going on with this.
Yeah, because like if it falls off the edge, it would be shallow right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It has to be.
Yeah.
So
I don't think this is a disc.
Ooh.
Because here's the thing, Luke. The thing that's really fucking with me about this whole thing.
Yeah.
Why is it moving faster here? It feels like it's moving faster near the edge. How?
It does. There is a current, yeah.
How can it move faster at the edge if it doesn't narrow? Like if it gets narrower right before it falls off, then it has to move faster, right? Because the same volume of water has to move through a smaller area. But from what it sounds like, most of the world has the water falling off of it.
Yes.
It would have to be moving the same speed at all points. Like, it would have to be moving outward at the same speed. Otherwise, you're going to, like, it's going to get ahead of the water that's behind it, not moving as quickly. And there's going to be like a place that there's no water. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
If the parts at the edge are moving faster, the parts just behind those are going to be, there's going to be no water there because the water has to catch up to
Well, hang on.
Yeah.
Because we need to specify between flow rate and velocity.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, Luke, please, come on. Hit us with the water stuff.
Because you're right that the flow rate should be constant.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, but maybe the volume is less? Is that what you're saying?
But if the volume that it's passing through is less, then the velocity becomes higher. Mm. Now, I agree with you that like as you expand, right, because it's going outward,
yeah,
the volume theoretically should be getting bigger.
Right.
Right.
Because it's however, a disc.
However,
okay.
Dan.
Okay.
If we're getting shallower at a faster pace,
yes,
then we're expanding in circumference.
Yes.
Then I think we can get some velocity going.
So then, Luke, this brings me to the shape I think it is. It's a big crater.
Okay. It's a big crater. Yes, I
right?
agree.
Right, because it's deep in the middle and then gets shallower and shallower and shallower at the edges so that you have increased velocity at the edge.
Okay. Yes.
So it's not a disc, it's a bowl.
It is a bowl. That's correct. I agree.
Okay, well, I'm glad we figured that out because this was really bothering me.
Yeah, we worked through that. I'm proud of us.
Speaking of which, though, Luke,
mm-hmm.
we got to put a water wheel at the edge of this, right?
Ooh.
Infinite power.
So we're refilling the water because water's got to come in somewhere too, right?
I think it comes in where like the gods thing is. Like it's
got like a big waterfall. That thing's pouring water.
Oh, yeah. Tons.
Okay. That's where the water wheel needs to be.
Forgot about that. I mean, you could put it at both places, but yeah, probably better to be there. But the gods might want to mess with it. I don't know. I don't think that's the place.
Okay.
Let me put it at the edge.
Man. Opportunities for hydropower. Pretty good here.
Infinite hydropower.
I think.
It's clean energy, Luke. You don't have to worry about the magic stuff. Rincewind would love it.
Rincewind would love it. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Man. Soon, though.
Yeah.
It's early. Man.
That's why the water hasn't drained out yet.
Speaking of Rincewind, I have a small note for him in this section.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a humor thing that kind of did land for me.
Yeah.
Actually. There's a very like interestingly written thing about describing the color of magic.
Yeah.
Did you catch this?
Yeah.
And it's like describing it in all these kind of like flowery and grand terms. And then it just cuts to Rincewind says the color that it always thought it looked kind of greenish purple.
Yeah.
I liked it. This one was pretty funny to me.
Yes, yes. Very understated. Yeah. I also noted this.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have much more than that.
To be fair, Luke, not the first time Terry made that joke.
Okay.
Terry made that joke in chapter one as well. Not the exact same joke.
But thematically similar.
Thematically pretty similar.
Okay. Well, it's a good one.
It's a good one. It's a classic.
Wait, actually, okay, but hang on. Because I'm realizing that when we got into the details, I forgot my big question.
Yeah.
Which is, you think there's enough salvage to maintain an empire here?
Ooh. Well. Okay, they say they've got like, what, a quarter of the whole circumference netted? Is that right?
I think so.
Okay. Now, Luke, this world, as we have discussed, feels very small.
Mm-hmm.
So a quarter of the circumference of this bowl, mind you, not a disc, bowl.
That's right.
Probably isn't huge. And sure. So I think doable. Let's start there. Doable. Okay.
You mean to set up the nets?
To set up the nets.
By doable?
Yes. Okay. I think they've got some magical abilities which help.
Yeah.
With their hydrophobic people.
Well, okay, let me be clear. I'm not asking if it's doable.
Yeah.
I'm asking if the amount of salvage that you would get from doing this is like enough, because it kind of implies that this is what makes this empire rich.
I think it would be, and here's why, Luke.
Okay.
Everything that gets into the ocean that can't swim at some point reaches the empire.
Right. A quarter of everything.
Yeah, oh, sure. 25% of everything that gets in the water reaches this empire. That's a lot of stuff, it feels like.
Yes.
Now, we should account for the fact that heavy stuff probably ain't going to get there. So they're not getting big treasure chests full of gold.
Right. Dense stuff.
Yep.
To be clear.
Yep. Got to be denser than water. Well, significantly denser than water. But there is a flow that is constantly bringing stuff to them. Mm-hmm. You wait long enough, something's going to show up.
Right.
You also have to consider the fact that, because really what they are is they're a trash collection operation.
Yeah.
And if you operate that thing long enough, because you're catching all the trash, you know, the trash you're generating, that goes just right over the side, right?
Mm-hmm.
But any good stuff that's coming from anybody else, you're getting it.
Right, but you're really relying on, like, accidents.
Or you're causing accidents.
Or you
ever think about that?
Good point. Good point.
Yeah. They don't.
It just feels like, it feels like it would maybe be enough to sustain like a civilization, but like almost by definition, that civilization cannot be richer than the ones that it's feeding off of.
Yeah, but they're gold panning, right?
Metaphorically, you mean, or literally?
Here's what I mean. They're not feeding off one civilization, right?
Right. They're feeding off of everyone. Sure.
Right. So, you know, if they get the, like, maybe every civilization, like 10% of their wealth goes down the drain, right?
Mm-hmm.
If this empire is able to collect all that, once again, we're gold panning here, you know? We're concentrating that stuff.
All right.
And I will say, Luke, does it say that they're like one of the most powerful ones? They're definitely not more powerful than Two Flowers Empire, are they?
No, they're not more powerful than Two Flowers, but it does say that they're like wealthy.
Yeah, but maybe they're not very big either, right?
They are on like an island, mm-hmm. I think. I think you're right that they're small. And all their buildings are like wrecked ships, which looks, I don't know.
Yeah.
Has a lot of character, I'll give it that.
Gives it a real nautical vibe, as Rincewind mentions.
Yeah.
And I will say that they're, they seem to have another advantage, which we are neglecting, which is that they get to do these cool experiments off the edge.
Okay, sure.
Right? So they're like peeking down there to look at what's dangling between the turtle's legs.
Right.
And people pay a lot of money to know that.
People love to see that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Get a picture of it. Get Two Flowers to bring his camera with him. Whew.
Yeah, I will say when we got here, so because last episode I was making the note that there's no way that they could have come up with the hypothesis for the turtle.
Yeah.
But it seems like it was pretty easy to see, actually.
Yeah, now that we talk, after this chapter, where they can just kind of look over and see the turtle, it's like, oh, okay. Why was this even why was this even a question?
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, there's also fishing seems really easy.
Okay. Just, yeah, well, you get a lot in your net.
A lot in your net. So, food source, pretty good.
Also,
seem to have like much better magic than a lot of other places.
This, we do need to talk about this. And I think it might be related to another source of their power, which is that all the slaves, like everybody they capture, just becomes a slave for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's probably a financial boon for them in some ways. Like, that probably helps. But
maybe, yeah.
But the magic thing we do need to talk about, because I thought there was a rule that magic had to be hard. And so it had to be like the law of equivalent reality or conservation of reality.
Yes.
So do they have all these slaves doing sweatshop magic like we hypothesized last episode?
Maybe. I don't know. It feels like we kind of left that rule behind.
They're like casting fireballs and disintegration rays and lightning bolts and hovercrafts. Yeah.
Yeah.
What? How can we get to do this cool magic?
I don't know.
Why isn't everybody living here?
Maybe this is what they're harnessing that hydropower for.
Well, I think they are. Somehow. They do talk about how there is more magic at the edge, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So that makes sense to me in the fact that they can like do more magic with it, but it...
It doesn't. I agree that it seems like it should do something about making magic easier. It doesn't really make the rule that we talked about, like, go away.
It feels like, Luke, this once again feels like a thing where Terry is fucking with us, because it feels like a thing where Terry made up a rule in book two,
yeah,
or in chapter two, and was like, don't worry, the magic follows this particular system and it's gonna have consistency. And then this chapter, Terry was like, fuck that, magic is just you can cast fireball and shit, it's cool. And if you're like complaining about it, you're a fucking nerd.
Yeah,
let me cast fireball.
I think that's right, because we also ignored that like imagining a dragon seems pretty magically intensive.
Yeah. And there's like and he explains it as there's like a region of more magic. Like there's a region of like a lot more magic in the world. And if that's the case, if I'm a wizard, I'm hanging out there all the time. Like I'm not going to be in a spot that there's not a lot of magic.
Right. And my qualm with this, and again, yes, you're right that this makes us seem like nerds because it's a nonsense book. But these are two different things going on, which is like the amount of like loose magic does not affect the rule of the magic. When you do magic, it has to be just as hard as doing it without magic.
Correct. At least if that rule is a rule.
Which is, maybe it's not.
Terry.
Come on.
What are you doing to us, Terry?
Man. Okay. But we do. Okay, so we do make it to the capital.
Mm-hmm.
And some astronauts. Pretty cool. What do you think about going over the edge here? Are you hyped for it?
Yeah. I think go where no wizard or tourist has gone before.
I agree.
They don't go because it's easy, Luke. And all that good stuff. I think do it.
Go I think see do it too.
See what's dangling between these turtles' legs, you know?
You got to figure that out. I do like that they make a big deal about doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And like getting all these resources together, right? Like going to the moon, right? It's like a national investment in research and
right.
all this stuff.
Yeah.
To like actually launch ourselves up there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just made a little roller coaster like with a ramp.
Yeah. Well, they want it to be fun too.
You're right. Yeah. I think that was cool. Yeah. I liked it.
It was nice. It was nice. I can't remember from the beginning of this book. Do they know the sex of the elephants that the bull is on?
I don't recall.
I don't remember. I don't think that they did. But then I thought they used pronouns for the elephants.
Mm. Okay.
Mm. Wait a minute. Luke! Okay. Terry's fucking with us. This whole book, I think Terry is fucking with us. Because, Luke, I'm going to read just like the first... Okay, Luke. Let me just read you from the prologue, okay?
Sure.
In a distant and secondhand set of dimensions, in an astral plane that was never meant to fly, the curling star mists waver in part. See, Gray Atu and the turtle comes, swimming slowly through the interstellar gulf, hydrogen frost on his ponderous... His ponderous limbs. We already know the gender, the sex of the turtle.
Okay. Yes.
Terry tells us in the first page what they're going to find when they go look. Terry.
Right.
What we don't know. Why do you? Okay. Now, he does point out that there is a question of Atwin's actual sex. But Terry, I feel like, is telling us at the beginning it's a he.
Yeah, but maybe Terry's, you know, omniscient narrator, whereas the people
all right.
don't know.
But I feel like we as readers already know.
We as readers do know.
We know what they're going to find down there. We don't know the sex of the elephants, though, which could be valuable information.
Could be. I mean, there's already four of them, so, like, they could be... going at it any time.
Right. And that could be dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Probably easier to find
for
out.
Sure.
You don't have to go as far.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
Weird book, huh?
Yeah, Luke. I feel like we need to give some short reviews if you're out of notes.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. This book is weird as hell. And yes. I didn't like it very much most of the time.
Yes, I agree.
I quite enjoyed the first chapter. I thought the second chapter was kind of fun too. Chapter 3, if you couldn't tell by our episode, I hated. Chapter 4, I was like, all right, I'm sick of this shit. I'm tired of this. And Luke, it gets a lot of comparisons with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's like the fantasy version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which mm-hmm. is a book that I have a lot of fond memories of. I read that in like 2016. That was like the first book that I read after high school when I was like, oh yeah, I actually like reading. I'm going to read a book for fun.
Wait, 2016 though.
Sorry. 2013.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. And I have reread that since. I think it holds up. And I think part of the reason why I can do that book, but I had such a hard time with this one, is Hitchhikers follows one storyline through each of the books. And there's a lot of crazy bullshit that happens in the meantime, but it's like still following like a sort of a plot throughout the book.
Yeah.
And I feel like, once again, chapter 3 is where Terry completely lost me. Because I was just like, Terry, I feel like you're fucking with me and it's too much. Like, I get it. You're doing all this clever, like, fantasy, look at all this bullshit thing. It's too much bullshit. We get it. You're pointing out how a lot of it's all, like, weird bullshit. I get it. Okay? I want to read a story, though.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree that my biggest complaint is that because it's not actually a story.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really attached to it in any way.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's just a bunch of things that happen with kind of jokes thrown in.
Yes. Yes.
Every now and then. It's and like most of it's nonsense.
It's like a and variety so like, show. It's like SNL, where it's just a bunch of sketches that they're making fun of fantasy stuff.
Right. And I do get them. And like a lot of them are funny.
Yeah.
But I was never like, I can't wait to go read this. It was always like, I gotta go read this for the pod.
Yeah. This is also how I felt, which is disappointing. Truly,
I'll also say the writing style was kind of hard for me.
Yeah.
It was like, and I think I've said this before, which is that like the way that things are written, like I read them like, I don't know how to say this. I read them like at the pace that it makes sense mm-hmm. in my head. And like the way that this was written was really like fast.
Yeah.
And there was not like gaps between things or like events happened really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like reading it so quickly that I was feeling anxious as I read it. I don't know. I realize that that's probably not a common experience and this is like purely how I read. But it was really difficult for me to read just purely because of the way that it was written.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you, Luke. I also was feeling that as well. Like, there's a certain amount of pacing in a story where when it's moving quickly, it is fun. Like, when there's a battle scene or there's, like, a chase scene or something like that where it's fun that it's moving so quickly. But I think in this, it wasn't fun when it was moving quickly, partly because I was, like, trying to figure out the jokes and references that Terry was doing because it was a bunch of nonsense. And so I was like trying to figure out what was going on.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think this is disappointing because I liked like the style from chapter one was very fun and I was very into that style. I think the fact that we don't really care about our two main characters by the end is one of the biggest issues for me. And I feel like with Orconomics, which is a sort of a parallel, I think. The difference there is like it felt like a story.
Yeah.
Whereas I think you made a good point. This didn't feel like a story necessarily. It felt like a bunch of jokes.
Yeah.
Which sometimes were very funny, but a lot of the times I was like, "All right, I'd rather read a story, please."
Yeah. Yeah, they often weren't like so funny that I was like, this was worth it. It was often like, oh, that's kind of funny.
Right. Right. But anyway, Luke, we're moving on to a story.
Well, let me just say I didn't like it enough to read another 40 of these.
No, no, sir.
But yes, we are moving on. New book for next week, Dan, we're going to be reading The Raven Scholar. By Antonia Hodgson. Hodgson?
Yeah. Sure. New book, who dis?
That's right. It came out this year, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Came out, well, last year. Came out in 2025.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Luke.
Well, we're modern, Dan. We're making the big jump from Color of Magic to modernity.
That's right.
We're going to be doing this in thirds, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So come along. On our magical carpet ride, we'll bring the hot takes.
and be the dumb nerds.